coming up.
Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Log yourself onto any chat room or message board, any internet forum that ranges beyond the like-minded communities, say of, quilters or writers or collectors. Do it. Dip your cursor into the computer free-for-all on, say, Iraq or politics in general. And be prepared not so much for the keyboard clatter of informed debate, but for a mud-throwing mess of personal assertions, a juvenile spray of name-calling, a sticks and stones of playground pushing match, all conducted in the font of Times New Roman. Well, what happened? The internet was to have been the great equalizer, the new world's forum for real-time exchanges of ideas. Instead, it reads more like short scripts for Jerry Springer banged out with smileys attached. Connection listeners, were all those hopes unrealistic? Have the chat rooms and the forums become the speaker's corner of the web, all jabber, no listen? Well, there are, we know that, nooks of thoughtful conversation, but the best are heavily mediated by playground supervisors blowing a whistle whenever troublemakers crash the conversation. So how much regulation, how much censorship does it take to elevate online chat? Our numbers are 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me from our Washington bureau is Mike Godwin. He's policy fellow at the Center for Democracy and Technology. He's also a moderator on The Well. And from the NPR bureau in New York, speaking, not typing, is Nicholas Thompson. He's a Markle fellow with the New America Foundation, where he focuses on the internet's impact on innovation. Welcome to both of you.
Glad to be here.
Thank you very much.
Nicholas, let me start with you. You wrote recently that conventional wisdom, that the web will change everything, is kind of morphed into the web, is good for nothing. Were you overstating the case?
In the realm of political discussions and online forums, that is correct. What we found is that about 5 years ago, many people thought that the web would just transform politics, transform discussion. There would be incredible Jeffersonian democracy would flower. Didn't happen. What we are seeing is a few specialized applications for the internet and politics where the net does make a fantastic difference. But the big things that people thought would happen just haven't turned out to be right.
Have you figured out why?
Well, there are a couple things. The article that I wrote most recently in the Boston Globe was a discussion of online chat groups and political message boards. And there are a couple reasons why those generally digress into flame fests. And number one is, I believe it's harder to, most people agree that it's harder to have a conversation online. You miss a lot of cues in the change of voice. You miss whether people are paying attention. There's a lot of visual and non-written cues that you just can't get across on a computer. So that's the first. Second is that sociological studies tend to show that the people who participate in online message boards tend to be people who don't have a lot of political discussions, who don't feel confident in their conversational skills, and they're probably more likely to flame you anyway. And then third, the medium encourages flaming and ranting. Number one, you're anonymous. Number two, it's easy and it's quick. You don't have to listen to someone else. You don't have to be listening to someone else. You can just type whatever you want as fast as you want. You can get up and you can leave your keyboard. There are a lot of reasons why one would hope this would work, and there are a lot of reasons why one day maybe this will work, but right now it doesn't work.
Do you agree with that, Mike?
Well, I certainly don't. I certainly don't want to flame Nick over this issue, but I really have to disagree. I think you're going to see, if you explore online environments enough, you're going to see the full range of environments. One of the things that we see whenever we have a new medium is the first flush of response is, it's going to bring utopia. And then, of course, there's a backlash. People discover that when you put new media, new powers, new technologies in the hands of ordinary people, they don't always use them the way we wish they would. I think it's certainly the case that there are many, many very clear and well-informed online discussions, and those are not really attributable to someone doing policing either. In fact, as you mentioned, I'm a moderator on The Well, on a couple of conferences. The main one that I moderate. I think the last time I deleted a posting that was inappropriate was in 1991.
But hang on a second here. If I want to take part in one of the conversations on the well, I have to pay money to do that, right?
You might have to pay $10 or $15 a month.
So if I'm going to pay that, am I not going to be slightly more respectful than someone who runs by with a can of verbal spray paint?
Well, I don't want to give the impression that everybody who pays to be on the well is utterly civil. In fact, there are flames on the well as well. One of the things that we discover is that the kinds of things that people want to discuss deeply are often the things that they feel very passionate about. And when you have passionate feelings, sometimes they run high and people engage in heated exchanges. And I've done it myself more than once. I've apologized for saying something I really shouldn't have said. But not because, you know, I think the thing that we have to understand is really that language is certainly rich enough to support the full range of human expression here. I have to disagree that, you know, whether you can see somebody's facial expressions is really the key issue as to whether, you know, whether people get mad or not or call each other names or lose their temper over a political debate. I think if you look long enough and you hang out long enough in a bunch of different environments, and I've sampled pretty much all of them, including the free ones, including the ones for pay, you see everything. You see the full range of human behavior. And sometimes humans act well, and sometimes they act badly.
Nick.
I actually don't think there's that much space separating us on this. I do think there are places, the well is a good example that's often cited as a place where there are frequently civil discussions. There are often very civil discussions on Slashdot, which is a computer and technology message board that I use a lot. The argument that I'm making is that open discussion forums where everybody can participate, where the Jeffersonian democracy was really supposed to flower, they don't work. Next question is, what does work? Well, maybe something where people have to pay so they have more ownership. Mm-hmm. Maybe something where people are broken into small groups, like I talked about a couple of examples about this in my story. Maybe those will be the best that we can do. But the ultimate goal of allowing everybody to get in, which is what the internet makes possible, it's not working.
Can we just step back a little bit here? Now, Nick, you mentioned the expectations of these types of unmediated chat groups as little as 5 years ago. And I remember some of this talk and writing going into the 2000 presidential election. But Mike, some of this goes back almost 20 years, doesn't it?
Well, and certainly I've been online for about 20 years, and I've been online on anonymous forums, that is, or forums in which I did not have to identify myself, and right. Some in which I did. And I saw in some of the anonymous forums, I saw some very thoughtful, very well-informed, very civil discussions. And in many of the ones in which people identify themselves, I saw heated flame wars. I think that and all of these, by the way, this was fairly early in the phenomenon. Almost all of these systems were free or you know, much less expensive than anything that you see today.
But the reason I'm asking you that, Mike, is that, you know, if it's been around for as long as it has, and there's still that level of immaturity that I see that Nick's been writing about, is there any reason to believe that those kind of unmediated free-for-all places will ever move beyond that?
Well, you know, one of the facts of the human condition is that every 10 or 20 years, we've got a new generation of immaturity.
Don't you hate that?
It has to participate and it has to learn a new set of norms. We've got as I think one sociologist put it, we have to socialize a new generation of savages every generation. And it's a tough problem. I think it's also the case that even in face-to-face environments, you know, where people are normally civil at dinner parties or at other kinds of parties, you know, there's always the guy who drinks too much, puts the lampshade on his head, talks loudly, makes passes at other people's wives. And, you know, the fact that there are physical cues telling him that he shouldn't be doing that doesn't seem to help. I'm really quite skeptical of attempts to attribute the particular problems that Nick identifies. And certainly they do happen in many forms. I don't want to give the impression that all is rosy out there.
Right.
But I think it has a lot to do with the way human beings are. It has not so much to do with the medium. In fact, even the miscues that people have. Sometimes somebody may show indecision, but it's interpreted as indifference or aloofness. You know, it's not really reliable. Communication, by its very nature, is fraught with the possibility of misunderstanding. There's one other thing that I think is really important here, and that's that when you design forums that are primarily designed to be live chat, that is to say, simultaneous environments where people are all online at once, you know, trading quips and one-liners, those environments, I think, really do not lend themselves to more thoughtful discussions. It's really more, can you top this? Can you get attention? The best forums, I think, are the ones where people can write more discursively. They can write a paragraph or two or sometimes more. They can cite sources, and in which there's a greater degree of permanence of the discussion so that people who come in later can read what's happened before and get a sense of what's been discussed and what the thread is. If you have that kind of time binding in an online forum, I think that fact alone is going to do a whole lot to make the conversation deeper, more meaningful, more substantive, more thoughtful.
Let's hear from David, who's calling in from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I just wanted to point out with the Greeks and you know, early on, when they had the large groups of people, when you round everybody up and you put them in a single space and you say, have an intelligent conversation, I just don't think that's really possible with that many people, unless you have a smaller segment that you can you know, have a conversation among people who have the same sort of boundaries of what they're going to talk about.
Do you spend time online trying to participate in these sorts of forums?
I've gone to them, and I start reading the postings, and it just quickly degenerates, and I have no interest in it. I can't see how I would inject anything that, you know, I would be getting anything back. It would be worth it. I'd rather talk to somebody one-on-one.
And is it then your conclusion that they don't work, or that you just haven't found the place where you want to have that level of written discussion that might appeal to you?
There might be, but it also takes an enormous amount of time, that kind of conversation where you're writing back and forth. I don't have enough time, unfortunately, because I've got two kids. So it's just, you know, maybe later, maybe someday when I'm really old. But I don't really know if that's what the internet is really best at. I mean, I get an enormous amount more information from areas that I didn't know existed than I used to. But in terms of going back and forth, at least writing, I think that takes a long time for that.
Nick, if we talk about what some of the expectations were for what someone like David, myself, could get out of participation in these things, it's precisely what Mike's describing, that if you take a moment, think about your thoughts, organize them, write them, post them, someone else gets to think about. I mean, isn't that what Mike McCurry and others had in mind when they're saying, oh, this will be fabulous?
I think that's absolutely what they have in mind, and sometimes it does work. The point that Mike made, that sort of chat discussions that happen at the moment where everybody's typing at the same time quickly degenerate, is certainly true. But also message boards where people can write something permanently which stays up for a long time, which is what all these people had in mind, all these startups that were funded with millions of dollars in 1999, 2000. It's what they had in mind too. And that didn't work. And it has to do with the nature of the internet, and it has to do with the nature of online conversation, which also ties into something that Mike said, and that is that when you have a dinner party, and let's say you decide you're going to discuss Iraq, there is a chance that somebody is going to end the night ranting and raving with a lampshade on his head. But I think there's about a 10% chance that someone will end the conversation with a lampshade on his head. Whereas if you go online, you try to have a conversation about Iraq, there's about a 90% chance that someone will end up with a lampshade on his head, figuratively.
Well, isn't that largely because if you're sitting around a dinner table, you at least know the first name of everyone at the table. Nobody's sitting there with a paper bag on their head saying, I'm Dr. Dodo tonight, and I'm not taking responsibility for anything I'm saying.
It is true. You know, Dr. Dodo is not there. And secondly, if somebody does start acting like Dr. Dodo, they'll cut him off and tell him no more beer tonight.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, your experience with online chats, message boards, forums, bulletin boards, and whether or not you see an evolution in the value or the degeneration of these places where you can talk, exchange ideas, or just flame. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That is, in fact, my name, Dick Gordon. So I have to sort of take responsibility for what happens on the program. And people who call up to a live radio program will also, you know, first speak to one of our producers and explain why they come in. So in a way, that's a way of filtering what is a radio chat room, which is in part what we're talking about today, whether or not if it was just open lines and anybody pile on, could you have the level of conversation? Is the value of conversation itself in any way such that you need to kind of dig past, find the rules, make a way of making sure that it happens. With me on the program today, Mike Godwin. He's policy fellow at the Center for Democracy and Technology. He's got 20 years experience in online discussion. Nick Thompson's also with us. He's a Markle Fellow at the New America Foundation. That's a nonpartisan public policy institute focusing on bringing new voices to the public dialogue. And so we'll start with the voice of Jeff, who's calling in from Boston. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I agree, I think, with more with your second guest. I guess that was Mr. Thompson. I don't see this great lack that you're speaking of in the program of discourse. In fact, I've been a chatter.
You think the stuff's pretty good out there?
Well, I think it's a mix. And you know what? It's the same kind of mix that you get if you do listen to conversations on the T or in a taxi or at a party. I've been chatting or on mailing lists now for 2 decades, all the way back to the old FidoNet bulletin board systems. And I think there's a cyclic nature. I think every time a large new group of people come into the network, into the conversation, there's a getting used to net etiquette period. You saw it when AOL dumped millions of people into the web.
Not a pretty picture.
And you see it every year. I went to MIT. I'm still very much involved with a lot of mailing lists that center around MIT people or MIT alums. And every year there's sort of the general tenor of the conversation dips for a couple months as soon as the new freshmen come in, and they sort of have to be educated in how to basically carry on civilly online.
But why do they take responsibility at some point if they are not obliged to by virtue of the fact that they've been looking you in the eye?
Well, I think for one thing, with some of these groups that are more geographically localized, you do have faces that you can put to some of these names. But I think in general, we've only had this online culture for 2 decades, and I think we are slowly gaining an appreciation for the fact that people online are actually people. It doesn't happen overnight, but I do see it happening over the last couple decades. There are still a lot of places where there's flaming. There's a lot of people who never learn to talk civilly and rationally. But you know what? I drive the streets in Boston, and I see that every day in the physical world as well.
You should try walking the streets in Boston.
There you go.
Jeff, can you stay with us? I don't know if you've got time, but hang on the line, and if you want to jump back in, just let us know. Say your name. It's Jeff here. Because I'm interested in we make, Mike, we've made a number of references to flaming as if it is the sort of cardinal sin of the web. But did I hear you saying earlier that, in fact, flaming has its own value?
In fact, I think it actually does. The Supreme Court famously pointed out when in a case involving a gentleman who was ejected from a public courthouse because he used the F word in reference to the draft, that he had a right to say that. He had a right to that, as I think Justice Harlan said, one man's obscenity is another man's lyric. The very fact that the word was so freighted with emotional weight and anger was part of the political commentary about the draft and about the Vietnam War. You know, I'm surprised that we're not actually discussing what I think is, one of the great new realms of discussion online, and that's weblogs or blogging. One of the things that we've seen an explosion of really just in the last few years is the number of people who are essentially running their own web pages. They're adding new material that they write, or they're adding commentary on other people's material, and they're commenting on each other. They're actually dialoguing with each other. So you might find, on Glenn Reynolds' Instapundit, you might find a reference to Mickey Kouse or to Virginia Postrel's weblog. You see people writing essays or pointing people towards their sources. You see something that looks very much like a very live scholarly debate, and I think what we're seeing now is really tools that have come into place that have led to the fruition of just exactly the kinds of prediction of political discourse that we were hearing about at the beginning of the 90s or even at the beginning of the Internet.
Nick, the idea that it's there, but it's just in a different form.
I think that's absolutely correct. I think what tends to happen with all things Internet-related and, in fact, many things technology-related is people will say, Nirvana is coming, it's going to come this way. It doesn't come, then people say, oh, gosh, it's not, it doesn't work. But it turns out something else has come up in the background, and I think weblogs are a great example. People thought, you know, say 4 or 5 years ago, that the internet would transform the news media. Well, it didn't do that. It turned out that, you know, most of the news sites kind of bombed out, and people just wanted to go to NewYorkTimes.com and use their traditional media. Mm-hmm. But now this new form, weblogs, has come up, and they are fantastic, and there's a lot you can learn, and it does really help dialogue. The same things happened in political campaigns. People thought that campaign websites would transform the nature of campaigns. Well, didn't happen. So then people have, you know, and many people have dismissed the internet as a political tool, but it does actually do a great job of helping people get out to vote and organize on election day.
Yeah, this is Jeff here. Can I say something about that?
Sure.
It's horrible weather in Boston today. Absolutely. It's our first nor'easter of the season. I need to register to vote. Instead of going out, I'm going to be able to do that online. In fact, that was what I was doing before I turned the radio show on. And I know that there's a lot. I've gotten several messages from people just telling groups of friends, hey, if you've got to register, today's the day to do it. And here's also some sites where you can see what the referendum questions are. And it's very subtle. People don't think about it being a big change, but it's a massive change in how available that kind of information and access is to all of us.
Let's get a couple more voices in here if we can. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Elise is on the line from Madison. Hi, Elise.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, I had terrible experience with online forum, and it's interesting that I agree with the last comments about the blogging. I'll go to Andrew Sullivan's anytime. He's very interesting and entertaining, and he has people writing into him. But I started in 99 with something called the Rush Limbaugh Forum, because I'm probably the only person in the country who listens to both public radio and Rush Limbaugh. But
we anyway, knew there was one.
the thing that Rush always says is that the aggressor sets the rules. And what happened on this forum is that a very aggressive liberal just flamed everyone who disagreed with him, and any woman who tried to talk about politics. I'm an expert on the greenhouse effect, and if, you know, that was not acceptable, I had to, you know, keep the comments to my children or something. And I was reviled for using correct grammar. After about 2 months, I said to myself, who needs this? I mean, it did take a lot of time, but it would have been worth it if I could have just, I was interested in the exchange of ideas, but I didn't want to be called filthy names.
Mike, are you ditto on that?
I think it's absolutely right that when you start building neighborhoods in cyberspace, some of them turn out to be bad neighborhoods. I mean, there are places I wouldn't go that I definitely wouldn't want to spend time in. It's that one of the reasons I think that my experience has been largely positive, even though I've had my own occasional disagreements or fights online with people, has been that, you know, I see what the choices are, and I know where I want to be. And I have to say, I don't want to give the impression that the only place to be is a kind of online gated community. The fact is that there are online environments that are very, very open, that let in a huge diversity of people with a lot of different political views, and those are the ones that I like best.
But what are you saying to Elise? Don't take it personally? Just run?
I think Elise did just exactly the right thing, which is to say she said, here's a bad experience. I don't want to be here. I want to look at some other place. And I think she's found Andrew Sullivan's blog. She likes that. I think Elise needs to join the well, to be quite frank. So I hope you look into that.
I don't have the money. But the other thing is there's a difference between disagreement and name calling. I didn't mind. There were plenty of genteel people who disagreed with me that I would have happily corresponded with for you know, ages. But this one very aggressive, very nasty person just responded to everything I said with just, you know, with just vituperation and foul language.
Well, you know, Nat Hentoff actually wrote about this issue. He calls it the heckler's veto in his book, Free Speech for Me But Not for Thee. And he says that one obligation in a free speech forum really is the case that the moderator, there needs to be a moderator who maybe doesn't moderate heavy-handedly, lest the discussion flow very freely. But on the case, in a case where there's someone who's so disruptive that they're really ruining the experience for everybody else, that's a point for a moderator to step in and either correct that person's behavior or remove the person from the forum.
And Nick, if that person's not there, then one person actually does have the capacity to kill an entire conversation, right?
I think that can happen. I think that can happen. I wouldn't dream of disputing that. But I think it's a solved problem.
Go ahead, Nick.
I think what often happens is that there will be a good discussion people will be having, and then suddenly, one or two people will come in, one or two of the flamethrowers, vituperative people, and you can kill the conversation much more easily than you can start a good one. And they'll quickly, it's much easier to change a good neighborhood into a bad neighborhood
or
a good conversation into a bad one than the other way around, and that's a real problem with cyberspace.
One of the things that's been done on the web, though, that's kind of interesting is we've developed a tool. I don't want to say I have, but there has been developed a tool called, appropriately enough, the Bozo filter. If there's a user who's posting just every time you see them, they get your goat, they raise your blood pressure, you can essentially make that person's postings disappear and still read everybody else's. And one of the things you discover is that when people find that they are increasingly being Bozo, they often self-correct their behavior.
Well, one thing I did was write a parody of what had happened, and I used the playground as a metaphor. And said that this particular person had covered that we had had a nice basketball game before, and that this person had dumped a load of manure on the playground, so we couldn't play anymore. And I said, "Does nobody else notice this but me? Well, sorry, I'm going to go elsewhere."
At least stay with us if you can. I want to go to Kara. She's calling in from Draycott, Massachusetts. Hi, Kara.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for taking my call. I just had. Well, a couple comments. I'm pretty much in agreement with everything except maybe the Bozo filter. But
don't think that's a good idea?
No, actually, only because of the type of chat group I run.
You run a chat group?
Yeah. I've been running an adoptee rights chat group for 2 years now. And the reason why I started the chat group was because I was having a lot of difficulty trying to push the envelope and advance a debate on other groups, which included parents, professionals, and things of that nature. So I wasn't getting a lot of the adoptee rights work done that I could have, that I could do on my own chat group. So I ended up starting my own.
Did you find people banging in with, "I want to talk about Saddam Hussein"?
No, it was more that, if I would bring up something like, say, the medicalization of adoptees, a lot of times there's a lot of research studies and very few scholarships. That's just a fact. And, bringing that up was, you hate counselors, you're flaming, you're starting trouble. So I find that it can be used both ways. It can be used to stifle debate, or it could be used to further debate. And, it's pretty much up to the moderator how they're going to use their chat group. Are they going to use it to advance the debate, or are they going to use it to stifle it?
Let's go back to Jeff, who called in a little while ago, because, Jeff, you're saying that these things, you like them, they work, and how do you express tone? How do you participate in something like Kara's group, and blow off a little steam and not hit the Bozo filter? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think that part of it comes with, once you're online for a while, you do learn not to react immediately when somebody ups the emotional tone. And it's just like in real life. As children, I have a toddler. And when she's with other toddlers, if one gets set off, they all get set off. And we learn to put a delay into our emotional response. And that happens online, too. And I think also something that happens is the longer you're online, the longer you take part in these forums, many people become better writers, and you simply become better at expressing what you're feeling. I've had some of my long-held beliefs and attitudes, if not completely changed, definitely shifted, and I have to say I think the same is true in the other direction. There are bad lists, and there are lists that deserve to die, and groups of people that just don't get along, but that happens in the real world, too.
Nick Thompson, the idea that I could put up message out there that ends with, "you insufferable jerk," and then I put a happy face after it. It's like, do I mean it, but I just don't really want to be caught meaning it, or is it really meant to be a joke? It's understanding all the nuance of written Sorry, you go ahead.
That's actually Mike, but we have that problem in real life, too. When you say something nasty with a smile, is it really a joke, or is it, or is somebody really just trying to needle you? It is the nature of communication, which is a very complex thing, that there are always ambiguities to overcome. This is true almost at the level of the law of physics, as Claude Shannon, the famous information theorist, might have put it. When there are ambiguities, one of the things we do, and I've seen this happen as well as Jeff, I've seen people become better writers, more effective writers.
Yeah.
I've seen a greater willingness to apologize for misunderstandings. I've seen people develop new norms for resolving things. It's been exciting. I think what we're seeing is the very beginnings of people using the media the way people use it. William Gibson wrote in a short story about technology, about cyberspace 20 years ago. He said, the street finds its own uses for things. I think one of the things that we have to be careful of is that when the street, that is the general population, finds uses for a new medium that maybe don't match up to what our biggest hopes were, probably the best attitude we ought to take is wait and see. Let's tolerate. Let's let people experiment. Let's see how this shakes out. It's not always a problem that needs to be fixed. Sometimes it's a phase that needs to be grown through.
And, Kara, that's what you're saying, is to let them in, right?
Right, right. I found that, I've joined some adoptee rights groups where they don't let certain people in based on their case histories. And my whole premise to my group is let everybody in so we can compare notes and find out what's going on where. And by not letting them in, we're actually stifling the debate. We're limiting free speech. By letting them in, providing them an opportunity to, even if it's only to screw up, we're at least, providing that opportunity.
Let's set up a new message board. I want to thank Jeff and Elise and Kara for being with us for this part of the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice to have you.
Thanks.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. The conversation about chat rooms, message boards, forums, bulletin boards, blogs, ways of communicating on the web. And are we seeing, in fact, an intelligent evolution from the flaming to people learning how to use the language? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection on NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-TALK. And with us on the program, Mike Godwin. He's a policy fellow at the Center for Democracy and Technology. Nick Thompson is with the New America Foundation. It's a nonpartisan public policy institute focusing on bringing new voices to the public dialogue. And we're talking about the public dialogue, if you can call it that, that exists in various forms on the Internet. And Nick, we started out by talking about just what a great messy swimming pool the Internet can be and how intimidating it is. But, we seem to be ending up with a way of dividing up the water park. Some people want to be on the slide. Some people want to be in the hot tub. Some people want to be in the shallow end, that it's not just one great big free for all. Is that probably where we ought to be with this, that in the sort of smaller groups, perhaps of more or less like-minded people?
I think that's right. And it's sort of unfortunate that we're not able to have these mass conversations, that we end up needing to break into small groups. But I think it's partly the nature of the medium, the nature of human communication, and it's what we've gotten. What some people have found, a lot of people have found, is that if you have a 1,000-person discussion online about a rocket, immediately disintegrates. If you break it into 50 20-person conversations or 20 50-person conversations that are moderated, you have much, much better discussions. For some obvious reasons, one, people have ownership over the group, some of the things mm-hmm. we've been talking about. Two, it's much more easy to learn people's names. Three, you sort of get a group identity, and people who start to flame and become vituperative are kicked out of the group. So there are some of the sort of the social memes that we have in regular conversation are then applicable in online conversation. The problem with this is that fewer people join. one of the things that, one of the themes that's come up a number of times in this conversation, you know, Jeff the caller and Mike have both said they've been online for 20 years and, you know, have now ultimately or have found these groups that they really like to be part of.
Question is, did it take them 20 years to find those groups,
well, that's,
right?
That's the thing, is that most people don't have these groups, haven't found them, because where people go first turns them off. For some reason, some people are, you know, they're more thick-skinned, more technologically savvy, whatever the reason, they're willing to stick with it and eventually find their groups, find their small groups, find their nice communities. But for most of us, most of the world out there, you go online, you try to get in these conversations, you get flamed, and you say, forget about
it. No, it's true. It happens on our program as well. We'll do a program about some woman who has, you know, lived on a mountainside in Tibet for 12 years and say, you know, invite people to our forum page to exchange ideas about that. And someone goes, oh, yeah, I would really like to talk further about it. They open up that particular page, and there's two people who've obviously been barking at each other on our forum for months or years, just using that particular page to vent. And that person goes, oh, no place for me, right?
And that happens to lots and lots of people at lots of different points and times and internet sites, and it's too bad.
I think Jeff may speak similarly. My own experience in the online world when I first began to participate in local bulletin board systems and so on was that I think I knew probably within a day or two, I said, this is a great place to be because these are, you know, I'm one of those people who likes to spell out his ideas in more than one sentence. I'm maybe a little too talkative, but here was a place that gave me plenty of room to talk. No one was interrupting. I got to say what I needed to say. I found it very exciting, and it's one of the great jokes of the work I've done since then, that I keep being able to come back and work in this field and work in the theory of how these kinds of systems work. One thing that I don't know if many people read law professor Cass Sunstein's Republic.com, there's a common prediction that one of the things that people would do would be to sort of seek out, if not gated communities, then just like-minded communities where they were only really talking to people who shared their political outlook or their personal temperament. Interestingly enough, in promoting that book, the publisher put up a chat room for people to come in, who'd read the book, to come and comment on it. And many people showed up who'd read the book and disagreed with him. Well, that, of course, was itself an interesting phenomenon, because the prediction would have been that only the people, or mostly the people who agreed with Professor Sunstein, would have shown up, to pat each other on the back for their shared opinion. In fact, I think one of the things that we see, and it may be part of American culture, is there are a large number of us that seek out diverse opinion, that seek out disagreement and debate, partly because it sharpens our thinking and partly because we're interested in how other people think.
Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Daniel. He's on the line from Arlington. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is also a proposal. My experience online has been great, and one of the things that I find really useful is some kind of peer rating system, like in eBay, when you're a buyer or a seller.
Right.
Every time you conduct a transaction, you get rated by the rest of your peers. The same thing in online gaming communities, like a bridge club, where you get some rating, and people actually form tables or rooms where people above certain rating get invited.
I think, Nicholas, that you wrote about this, places where, you know, the best posts are showcased. Or are they rated like Daniel's describing?
Yeah, Slashdot, for example, which I brought up before, which is a technology discussion site and news site. Everybody rates everybody else's posts. And so you can then just decide, I only want to read posts that have been ranked at 4 or higher or 3 or higher. And it is a great way of filtering out the garbage. It's like a very sort of a complicated bozo filter. And that's done at some political discussion groups. It's a very useful tool. It should be used more frequently, and I think some of the major political discussion groups are going to move more towards that model in the next few months.
Daniel, let me ask you a question. When you're in one of these conversations, did you ever lose it and flame somebody the way we were describing earlier?
Well, I don't do it. The minute I see some flaming, I'm out of that room. It means that the conversation is not serious, but what I've done is also taking the conversation to the side, to a private chat room, and invite other people. That is basically a technical rating on real time.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
1-800-423-8255. To Raleigh, North Carolina, Janine's on the line. Hi, Janine.
Hello.
Are you an online chatter?
Oh, quite a bit. Not chatter. I post.
Okay.
Chat rooms and message boards are completely different places.
Fair enough. And you don't like the chat rooms?
Actually, no. No, I much prefer the posting style of communicating.
Why? Because you get to think?
I get to think. I get to read. I get to participate, I think, in quite a bit more detail in the conversations. A chat room just goes by so quick, and there's a million people in there talking, and they're just not really good for communicating.
There's still a lot of, spit sprayed around in the message boards and forums as well, though, right?
Oh, it depends on how you handle it.
Okay.
We have a place. It's I don't know if you want specific names or not.
Go for it.
It's called The Straight Dope. It's a place run by the Chicago Reader. Has nothing to do with dope. It's all about the straight information. And what it is your direct line to thousands of the smartest, hippest people on the planet, plus a few total dipsticks. That's a quote from their webpage. And it's very true. You run
You'd
into
be disappointed if you didn't find a dipstick on the day that you went.
Yeah. Well, what they do is they have forums, and they set aside different forums for different topics. And then one place that is set aside is called the barbecue pit. So if you have to flame, you do it there. And you might find yourself in there for something that you said. You have the choice of participating or not participating.
Well, that kind of takes the fun out of it, though. That's like
No.
going to a paintball hall when really what you want to do is spray graffiti around, right?
No, not really, because it allows the conversation to continue without degenerating.
Sometimes what people really do want is the paintball hall.
Right,
you know,
and then you would go off to the barbecue pit. But when you want to do anything from political discussions to, I don't know, witnessing, they have a place called Great Debates. And your requirements in there is that you actually have to debate, and you have to actually prove what you're saying with a cite or with a reference. Or, you know, you can't just make things up. You actually have to debate properly. So it's a very interesting place to go.
I should just mention that as people join the conversation in this hour and make reference to places where they've discovered good conversation, whether it's Straight Dope or Slashdot or The Well or whatever, we're going to try and have links to these places on our website. We're at theconnection.org, so you can sample some of that. If you don't like where you've been, maybe you can like places that that other people are recommending. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's bring Laird into the conversation. He's calling in from Chelmsford. Hi, Laird.
Hi. Hi, Dick. Thanks for taking my call. So I've been using Internet lists for about 5 years, and I've experienced both the negatives and the positives. I mean, I've seen everything from severe harassment to flame wars. And on the positive side, I've seen engineers get really solid results quickly from people they wouldn't have access to otherwise. So why I called, I have a comment about a new website. It's kind of got some experimental software on it, which so far has been used to augment courses or for online discussion work between students and colleges. It's an open tool. That doesn't mean it's not constrained to college use.
Where do we find it, Laird?
Pardon me?
Where do we find it? Can I get to it?
Yes.
Online?
It's at H2O, as in the symbol for water,
yeah.
.law.harvard.edu. And it's actually a software project I helped to write this past spring. And the idea behind it is it's much more structured than traditional lists and message boards. It more closely mirrors a classroom structure. So the professor can ask a question, and then everyone who's participating in the discussion will be assigned to respond. And then you have rounds of discussion where new people are assigned to respond to the other people's old responses, and it's nicknamed the rotisserie, and it's designed to get people talking around a specific subject and make sure that the discussion stays structured, and it kind of prevents what I call the lurker problem, where people just kind of sit back and read the good
right.
posts that other people have submitted. And
let me just mention that we'll put that link as well on our website. I want to go to Nick and Mike, just on the idea of rules and working outside the rules. Mike, maybe you can start here, because when we're defining what works, we're defining ways of creating rules. And is it just a matter of finding the etiquette, the manners, the rules that don't constrain but allow people to talk?
I think one of the things that we've found is that some rules are often imposed by the moderator, but quite often you see social rules sort of spontaneously They're spontaneously built up from the ground up, where people discover what kind of rules of conduct work. For example, one very, very common norm in the online world is not to republish somebody's private mail in a public forum. So, for example, if you ask people to take their quarrel to private email, and then somebody says something terribly awful in private mail, and then you'll embarrass them by posting the awful thing that they said. One of the things that that people will do in response, that other members of the forum will do, is say, "You should not have done that, regardless of what he said."
Right.
Because that was private mail. You should have kept it private. And the only way we're going to have an environment in which private mail actually means anything is if you keep that rule. And nobody set that out as a rule. At least it didn't start out that way. That was a rule that people discovered was necessary for social functioning.
Nick Thompson, it seems to me as we sort of zero in on this, everybody's buying into the idea that the conversation's key, that the civil discourse needs to happen here.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the Internet is a fantastic medium for civil discourse, and it should be. You know, it allows people to communicate from across the world, from across the country. It allows people to get in touch with other folks that have no idea how to. It allows people to cite references and to add more information. It's just dynamite. And if we could figure out a way to have real political conversations, it would do great things for this country. You know, part of getting to that point is going to be setting up rules. Part of it's going to be finding the norms, as Mike just mentioned. But there's also going to have to be a lot more stuff, because there is something about the Internet that makes these conversations degenerate, and we've got to figure out a way around that.
But you're both saying we're actually on the way to doing that.
I think we're both saying that we believe in rules, and that there are certain kinds of rules and norms that make conversations work better. I have to say I don't think there's anything special about the Internet that makes this a particular problem. I think I'm always ready. I always look first to the simplest explanation, which is the human nature and the human condition.
And I mean, I agree with the first part. I think we do need rules. We do need norms. We're on our way. And I disagree on the second part. I think there's something about the fact that you can be anonymous on the Internet, and there are a number of things about the Internet that we've already discussed that make it harder.
Well, you guys are so polite when you're flaming each other.
I'm going to flame them in private mail later.
I'll flame you right back.
That's right.
But on the air, I can listen to your verbal cues and understand what's going on.
Nice.
Nick, thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
Nick Thompson's a Markle Fellow at the New America Foundation. Mike Godwin, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Mike is a policy fellow at the Center for Democracy and Technology, also a moderator for The Well. Just a reminder, go to our website. We're at theconnection.org. Lots of great suggestions of places to explore different ways of talking to people using the Internet, and maybe that's a place where you can experiment. Try our forums, too. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
Why are you touching the lead? I'd like to know her.